Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah Day, recording from home on March 11th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests, Patrick Lloyd Brennan and Holly Greco of Quebec Drama Federation.
English theater in Quebec is more than what we see on our stages. It really is a community. It's a way for us to gather.
We've watched folks, you know, toy and tinker and see what works for theater. And is it the same? Is it something new? Is it just a carbon copy of film that we're not achieving really at a high level? You know, like it's, and it'll change depending on who you're talking to, which is also a really remarkable thing.
Mireille Camier and Jean-François Boisvenu of Théâtre Periscope.
How could we know that in March 2021, people will still want to go on the web? I don't know. And would they still, would the theaters be open? So it was a very hard year for those kind of decisions. All the artists had to find those decisions of what should we plan.
And Emily Ruest and Camille Strouli of Festival Bouge DC and Mainline Theatre.
It's out of the ordinary. I love video dance, so I'm happy to take part of the festival this year in that matter. And it's being, I feel that what we did is very, for me, there was something natural to it. And I love all the application we received. So it's in a weird way, it came out nicely.
Kenny from the future would have came and said, Kenny, next year we're going to be in lockdown. Get ready for this. I wouldn't have believed it. First of all, I would have been shocked that there would have been a future Kenny there, but I would also not believe that.
Before we begin, some updates. It has been a year. A year ago tonight, I hosted this show in studio at CKUT, interviewing artists who were not sure if their work would be going ahead in the days to come. About an hour earlier, the Premier of Quebec had announced a health emergency, and earlier in the day, the World Health Organization had declared a pandemic. After that, things basically shut down. We've learned to change our habits, we've dealt with upheaval, and we have lost over 2 million lives around the world to COVID-19, over 10,000 here so far in Quebec. I'm sure in years to come, we will continue to process what we have gone through and continue to go through, living through loss, illness, fear, isolation, but also remarkable moments of community and love. And we will see it on paper, on screen, and hopefully live on stage. Today is a national day of commemoration in Canada for those we have lost. The Premier of Quebec, François Legault, led a minute of silence at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. We're being asked to thank and support the healthcare workers and essential workers who have kept everything running in the past year. I hope you can find a way to remember to take stock and take care of yourself and your loved ones today. A few things to note. This week, over 30 venues with the Quartier des Spectacles partnership in downtown Montreal published an open letter to the province, asking for a timeline to reopen safely and the curfew to be set later. This organization includes the venues at Place des Arts and places like Club Soda and the MTELUS Theatre, former Metropolis. With limited reopenings happening in gyms and restaurants outside of Montreal and the greater region of Montreal, some venues are wondering when they can do that safely too. Cases are going down, max vaccinations are underway, so there is room to be optimistic. But remember, around 600 to 700 people still test positive every day on average here in Quebec, and there are more contagious and fatal variants circulating in Montreal. Meanwhile, some movement at Geordie Theatre, the company that provides theatre for young audiences and families. Artistic and executive director Mike Payette will be moving on after 5 years to a bright, shiny new adventure. He'll be starting as artistic director at Tarragon Theatre in Toronto in January 2022. Mike's transition to Tarragon actually starts this fall, but he will help look for his successor at Geordie and also program the upcoming season, his sixth, and direct two shows. Mike is a frequent voice on Upstage. Congratulations to him and continued success to Jordy as they start the search for someone to fill his shoes. And by the way, Jordy is hosting a pub quiz or a trivia online on March 20th next weekend if you want to take part. And by the way, Broadway is back, or coming back. As the vaccine rollout continues in the U.S. this week, there is hope that Broadway shows will be back by the fall, likely with face masks for the audience. And as for distancing, well, they have to be 75% full to make money. So something to keep an eye on. On to our interviews tonight. Throughout the year, you've been hearing in great detail on this show, Upstage, from artists on how they are handling the pandemic and continuing to create and perform despite the restrictions on everyday life. I wanted to check in with two people who are in tune with the community for the big picture. The Quebec Drama Federation is an arts service organization that supports and lobbies on behalf of English language theater in the province, with members including student, community, and professional groups. Their work is the community. They're based in Montreal, and a disclosure, I advise the communications committee at QDF on a volunteer basis. Patrick Lloyd Brennan is managing director, and Holly Greco is manager of programs and partnerships. They are planning what they call a micro conference to take stock. A year in with QDF takes place March 24th to the 27th, coinciding with World Theatre Day. Patrick and Holly spoke with me yesterday. Welcome, Holly and Patrick, to Upstage. How are you guys doing this week?
Doing good. Thank you so much for having us, Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, much appreciate it. Can you believe it's been a year since the World Health Organization declared a pandemic and shut everything down? Were you guys seeing any theater or any performances the week leading up to everything closing?
Actually, I think the last show that I saw live was with Holly at Centaur, and I'm pretty sure it was the opening of Mob at Centaur Theater. Yeah. I think that was the last show we saw. So.
And honestly, what a show to go out on. That was an incredible show, and I'm not just saying that. Like, it really blew my socks off. It helped me over for a little while, maybe not a year. It made me want to see more. But yeah, that was the last thing we saw together. We've watched the adaptation over the course of the year and just see the community do what they can and figure it out. And it's feeling their way through the dark, like everyone, you know.
Yeah.
But absolutely in this sector, we've watched folks, you know, toy and tinker and see what works for theater. And is it the same? Is it something new? Is it just a carbon copy of film that we're not achieving really at a high level, you know? Like, it'll change depending on who you're talking to, which is also a really remarkable thing.
You guys are working on something very special coming up for end of the month. It's called A Year In, very apropos as a title, March 24th to the 27th. What's the goal here with putting together this micro conference?
You know, it's been a very difficult year for all of us, for the theater community, for Quebec's English speaking theater community. It's been a tough year. It really is, you know, we really do kind of need this time to come together in collective reflection, to mobilize, and in many ways to kind of reignite our community, reignite our sector. There's still quite a bit to celebrate, but we do sort of need this little bit of time to check in with each other, see where we're at, and talk about where we want to go next.
Yeah, I feel like we have noticed and have been a part of these conversations happening in pockets across kind of the landscape, the theater landscape, for English theater specifically. And as QDF, we wanted to, you know, use our platform to take these separate conversations and bring them all together and try and kind of sew in what different folks are concerned about, what they're feeling like, just kind of elevate the conversation to it being a communal one.
Patrick, you kind of touched on a little bit of all the challenges that the year has brought. I'm wondering for both of you if there's something specific that you've kind of seized upon as being like a major headache.
Well, I think that, you know, I was about to say all of the things aside, but it is a long list and I don't want to be disrespectful. You know what I mean? I don't want to be disrespectful of the incredible, incredible challenges that our entire community, companies, individual artists, audiences, patrons, everybody's really feeling. But I think that aside from the obvious, you know, difficulty obtaining funding, emergency funding, the incredible amount of folks that have had zero income or have lost their jobs, something that I find, if I could zero in on this a little bit, English theater in Quebec is more than what we see on our stages. It really is a community. It's a way for us to gather. And I think that something that we're starting, that we've started to realize or started to learn, say halfway through this last year, is that yes, we're absolutely missing our shows on our stages, but we're also just missing that opportunity to be in a lobby, in a theater lobby, or to hang around for that drink after the show and talk about art, talk about our lives, talk about, you know, what it is that's important to us and where we're going. So that's definitely something that I think is a great concern.
Those kinds of organic conversations, right? Holly, is there anything for you that kind of stands out as a big challenge?
Yeah, I guess what comes to mind, I'll say in this moment, is watching our independent theater companies and our community theater companies who just don't have quite the same infrastructure to support them. They absolutely have the audience and they have the support of course, QDF. But looking at more of our professional companies who have absolutely their own burden that they're trying to sort through right now, but they have the they have the infrastructure a little bit more to function within, and to see our independent community companies who are doing this so much, fighting tooth and nail every production they put on, really suffer the brunt of that and wondering when's the next time they'll be able to make this happen, whether theaters open or not. I really feel for them. And I, again, with a year in, bringing them together and letting them know and continue to remind people, you know, from all spans of our theater community that you have a place with QDF and we are advocating for you no matter what.
And so this conference that's coming up is very much like a dialogue in terms of connecting with people. And there's several events throughout. There's also a launch party. We can't forget. It's not all chats and dialogues, right? Can you tell me perhaps about some of the elements each of you will be a part of for this micro conference?
We're kicking off the conference with a community address. So we'll have some words from QDF President Anissa Cameron, from John Rondeau, who's the general manager of the Siegel Center, but who has also been doing quite a bit of work with the Conseil Québécois du Théâtre, as well as we'll have words from Mike Payette, who is artistic and executive director of Geordie Theatre, but also the vice president of PACT, which is the Professional Association of Canadian Theatres, who I just want to give a quick little plug, are also sponsoring this conference. So we're very thankful to have their support. So that's sort of the first part of opening night. And I'll actually throw it over to Holly for the second part of opening night. The real teamwork here.
So we are launching the hashtag We Are Still QC Theater. So if you know QDF, we're kind of playing with two concepts here. We're playing with hashtag We Are QC Theater, which is a campaign that we launched about 3 years ago to really bring awareness on social media about all the different varied aspects of QC theater, especially on the English side. And our amazing comms committee and comms coordinator are working hard to launch hashtag We Are Still QC Theater to just kind of bring new life into that same idea, that same mantra, how much we have continued to grow and how resilient that community is. So we're kind of mixing that with I'll call it a crown jewel. QDF really is known for our calendar launches. We obviously had to halt production on our calendar, our seasonal calendar that we were putting out 3 times a year. But this kind of harkens back to that launch style where we are inviting our member companies to send in 2-minute videos to kind of give us an idea of what have you been up to? You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be creative. Maybe you've put on a few staged reading or like Zoom staged readings rather, or maybe you've been doing internal work on looking at your operations, looking at the kind of stuff that you want to take on, playing with the idea of theater over video. You know, there's so much that I think our companies have been up to that we haven't had an opportunity to really hear about. So we're opening it up to them to kind of lead us through what's been up. And yeah, I have to say, it kind of feels a little bit a la Fringe for All. You know, we're giving them we're giving them a minute, and we're giving them 2 minutes to just be like, tell us what's up and we'll see you soon.
Speaking with Patrick Lloyd Brennan and Holly Greco of Quebec Drama Federation, thank you so much for both being here. The mini conference itself is the 24th to the 27th. Do you still envisage supporters, other people who donate or people who go to see shows frequently being part of the conversation?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we have definitely had boots on the ground to really know what's been going on with folks, but I'm sure that our, you know, audiences are curious as to how the community is surviving. Like, they have, there's no theater without audiences, you know, like, that's really truly it. And I think it's really important for them to get an idea of, this is really what's going on. Maybe this is how you can help, but really we just want to see you again in the future. And this is what we're doing to try and work towards that.
I will give a quick plug if I can for our audiences out there. We are wrapping up the conference with a World Theater Day. So it does end on March 27th, which is World Theater Day. We are having a theater trivia fundraiser. So if you are a theater appreciator and you get out there and you see all the shows or read about all the shows, this is an opportunity for you to come and compete for the grand prize and bragging rights. And it's also a great way that you can support QDF in continuing to bring events like these to all of you.
Oh, so important. I'll be there for sure. I love trivia. We're kind of hitting a hopeful note as mass vaccinations ramp up in Quebec. We even this week found out, you know, that we might be lowering the age for people to sign up to 65, which is huge. Maybe even by Easter, could we have home visits? So, you know, it's baby steps, right? But of course, there are, you know, outside of Montreal, people, you can go to the gym now, you can go to Shea Cora if you have two people in your bubble. Slowly but surely, is a reopening, but it's delicate, right? Because we don't want to see increases in cases. Variants are a concern. You're not doctors, I know that, but what is the conversation right now in the community about when we can open theaters again? Are there people chomping at the bit? Are there people who say we gotta wait until all of Canada is vaccinated? I'm curious about that.
I do think it is, I don't want to say divided, but it is, you know, there are different perspectives, different opinions amongst the community. But I will say that one thing that does remain strong, and I will speak for the English theater community, I can't speak for the Francophone side of things, but is that our artists, our administrators, and our audiences, really, health and safety is number one. And so, you know, yes, there are many companies, there are many, you know, we're ready and willing to make sure that we can get back to work in a safe way. But until we can really pick up speed, do that well, plan well, be ready, be prepared. You know, we're going to have to wait until then, you know.
Yeah.
I do think that there is also the consideration of, you know, there's kind of the I don't mean to throw this term out lightly, but the PTSD of it all too, right? Mm-hmm. And even though theaters may be allowed to reopen and may be allowed to have audiences back, are folks comfortable? Are audiences ready to sit in a closed room? Yes, you know, distance from folks around them, but are they ready for that? And there's also, you know, you need to think about the financial side of things. Can, you know, there are only certain privileged companies and venues that can take that hit of putting on a production and only being able to fill their room to 25 to 50% capacity. Some need to hit 75% capacity, right? So can they take that on? And, you know, I think last but not least, like, is our audiences have kind of gone through it a little bit. We're very thankful for their support. And but you know, there's only so much like purchase a ticket, get a refund, purchase a ticket, get a refund, have a show rescheduled, you know. And we've got to be real with ourselves that we are now consuming theater, we're consuming art and entertainment in a different way. And so what's next, you know?
Excellent point. Mm-hmm. Holly, did you have anything to add to that?
No, as usual, Patrick said it beautifully. Beautifully. I'm still wondering how I feel, you know?
Yeah.
If I can be honest, I'm checking in with myself too as we learn more and more, and that's what everybody's got to do for themselves.
That's an excellent point as well. There is a bit of a shakeup happening at QDF, and I wanted to touch on that before I let you both go. Patrick, you're moving on to a very exciting new opportunity, but you can't do 10 jobs at once. So currently managing director of QDF, but outgoing. And where are you hopping off to next?
I am heading over I can't say replace because those shoes are far too large for me to fill, but I'll be stepping into the role of executive director at the English Language Arts Network, ELAN. So Guy Rogers is moving on, hopefully not too far because he's an adored arts advocate and incredible support for our community. This conference is kind of my goodbye. It's my last few days. I'll be definitely missing my team and missing folks at QDF, but I won't be far.
Holly, you're not going anywhere, are you?
Oh no, you can't get rid of me that easy. I'm sticking around. Yeah, I will absolutely be happy to see where QDF goes from here. Patrick has given so much to this organization in the last 2.5-3 years. And again, I'm not necessarily filling his shoes, but I'm very proud to be moving up as director of programming. And I will be in a co-leadership position, taking over the organization with a mystery managing director that we have yet to hire. So when you say shake up, it really is a shake up. But I'm excited to see what the next chapter of QDF brings, and I just know that everything Patrick has given us really sets us up for success, really honestly.
Well, Patrick, congratulations on your new position, and I think you've appeared to steer the organization with a lot of great help as well through the past couple of years, and I'm sure it's all in very, very, very good hands. So we'll see you guys at the Micro Conference, March 24th to the 27th. Thank you both so much for taking time out of your busy day to speak with me.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
That was Patrick Lloyd Brennan and Holly Greco of QDF. Congrats to Patrick on his new adventures with ELAN. I'm sure we'll be hearing lots from him. Find out more about a year in with QDF and register. It's pay what you can at quebecdrama.org/a-year-in. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, a surreal time for the dance community. But now, from Montreal, I'm going to take you to Quebec City and Tehran, Tunis, Barcelona, and Taipei. The world is just a screen away in Intersections, or Intersection, a show from Théâtre Periscope, a company based in Quebec City. They present a documentary theater experience, first created a few years ago but adapted to the pandemic, with a local in each of the aforementioned cities talking about civil engagement and revolution. Its creators call it a unique and intimate experience, and you have a few days left to take it in. Mireille Camier is co-director, and Jean-François Boisvenu is an actor and video designer with Théâtre Periscope. They joined me yesterday. Welcome, Mireille and Jean-François, to Upstage. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. How are you today?
Fine. And you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much. It's so much fun to be based in Montreal and to always be talking to Montreal artists. But as I've learned over the last few months, the internet makes us all a small world. And so getting to speak with you, putting a show that is very international and online is really special for me. What has been your thoughts as you've been working through the show and with a more global focus to it?
First, this show was created 2 years ago and was presented in front of an audience. So all the actors were in other country, but there was one audience in a place where we were presenting the show. So we did a tour. We went to Mexico, we went to Barcelona, we did it in Montreal. An opportunity with the pandemic to welcome the audience into our Visio conference. So I think it's cool because we can reach people from elsewhere. We can have audience from all over the world for this show now. So it's quite cool.
Has that changed at all, I guess, the meaning of it or the interpretation you think of the audience, like now that the pandemic has started and it's kind of, I think we're interacting differently, like with people in other parts of the world now, like things have kind of changed.
Yeah, surprisingly, people who have seen the show, the both shows, I mean, on stage and this one online, they told us that they prefer that new version only online because we are online, they are online, for them it's more intimate because they are not all in the audience and in front of some screens. Everybody is in front of their own screen, so they are like us. They share the same position.
Yeah, the same vulnerable. Let's say it's more the actor are very vulnerable because they're in there that we never know if things can happen with our internet connection, of course. And now the audience lives the same thing also. Like there's this stress of like, will it work? Will we stay connected? So it worked quite well.
So almost like a democratizing of the experience. Everyone's on the same.
Exactly. Yeah. We're all vulnerable at the same point.
On the same level, yeah.
Yeah. One of our actors, Rambud, was talking that he really felt it because he really felt that there was more union between the audience and them because we were all on the same level like that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I would, as I understand it, your performers don't feel like they're missing any connection, like there's not anything that's lost and by everybody being online?
For my part, I can see that not at all, because with the first show, the first version, we were not connected with the audience. So sometimes we have some sounds or laughings that we can hear but we were not in front of them, and I think we preferred that because we see everybody.
So when we were doing the show in Rio, it was still difficult because there was people from different countries that were on screens, like on Skype, on the screen, on stage. So there was still this very, in a way, the audience, it was very hard for the directing this show. The main idea was to make something with a lot of intimacy, mm-hmm. even if they were like far away on the screen. But now in this version that the audience is also looking at their screen, actually we're much more closer because we're so used now to have those relationship and have those really, we have a lot of intimacy now with Zoom and with the FaceTime and all that. It's really related to relationships. So now the audience tells us that they feel very close from them. Yeah. Like they were talking directly in their face, right?
Oh, Mireille, that's such a good point and so well put. And I also wonder if it's partly because I've been plugging in my computer or pitching it to my flat screen TV, or I'm watching something on my laptop, maybe in bed, maybe at my desk. Like you're thinking also about the receiving end of the audience being at home and watching all of this. The relationship between us and the artists is changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something, and we saw it a lot in the last year, of course, like I'm in my pajama playing piano on Facebook Live and all that.
Drinking wine, yeah.
We saw a lot of those. But I think what's unique about our show, what we try to do is to create an interaction, and we kind of have this risk of given some moments to interact with the audience that is there. So that's what we try to do differently than all the Facebook Live direct thing we saw, is that you can, as an audience, you're invited to open your camera and your microphones. So we're really using the Zoom platform that was the better to do this for what we needed.
Yeah.
And so we're on the Zoom platform and you are welcome to interact in different parts of the show. And what's funny also, when we open the Zoom at the beginning, like the audience entering the room, or like some people are chatting, talking to each other. There's something very casual, and let's say it feels like a family thing, being all together at the beginning of the show and also during the show. Not all the audience, of course, opened their camera and microphone, but we kind of have this relationship that we wanted to work with.
Yeah, and during, I think, the first first representation, we had a technical problem. So the actors, the performers were the Zoom for them were disconnected.
Oh, no.
And at that time, the audience, people opened their microphones and they started to chat and
what is happening? What should we do? And then we came back like after 2 minutes because we continued the show. But there was this moment that audience were kind of taking the leadership, saying, "Okay, should we wait? Where are they?" and all that.
It's so funny. They were kind of seeing the moment. You said the word risk just there, Mireille, and I'm wondering if, like, what risk looks like to you. I sat through a comedy show where, a comedian we'd spoken to in advance had said, you know, like, it's hard because sometimes people don't have their cameras open, or I'm trying to interact with somebody and, you know, you're looking at all these tiny little screens, whereas for in a comedy setting, you're going to be in a dark club and you can see the people in the first, second row and you can interact with them pretty easily. But there's still a risk when you're live. When you're on the computer, like someone's video might malfunction or everyone's screens are closed. Like, I'm wondering how you define risk for yourself. Are you worried people might not interact or people might not, facial expressions may not meet expectations?
Yeah, I think what we kind of have this moment at the beginning of the show where we kind of say the rules. As, you know, when we go to theater, we have some rules. You know, you have to sit. You know, you don't have to talk. You know that you must normally try to close your telephone, ring a bell. And then there's all those convention when we go to theater. But then using a show by the web, we kind of have to redo the convention and we talk about it. So at the beginning of the show, I kind of explain what we can do, what we cannot do, what we would like you to do, and how to arrange your setup to make it work, as to find this new ritual that we're living together on the web. And there is some risk of, like, okay, you can open your microphone if you like during the show, so they are welcome to open their microphone. So that's a risk in a way, but it's the same risk than in a normal audience where you can, there's always a possibility of somebody standing up and yell, in a real show. So there is still this risk of opening the microphone and saying, "I didn't understand," or just let your microphone open and the dog's barking beside you and the glass of water just falls. And, you know, all those things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But of course we have a person that is actually listening to the Zoom, and if something happened, he can close the microphone and stuff like that. We kind of have this people in French, it's a gérante de salle. Like, if somebody's yelling in the audience, somebody will go get them and say, "Please, could you shut up?"
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same thing on Zoom. It's like, okay, I will close your microphone. Sorry.
Usher / technician.
Exactly.
I'm speaking with Jean-François Boisvenu and Mireille Camier of Intersection at Théâtre Periscope. So we have five different cities, Tehran, Tunis, Barcelona, Montreal, Taipei, and you've found, am I understanding this correctly, there's someone in each city at a time?
Exactly.
Yes.
And everyone has involved, has done something on a political level or been involved with some kind of movement. How did you find these people and get them to sign up for the show?
Well, Ricard and I, the director, we worked on, we decided to talk about those uprising in the world, and especially the uprising that happened at the beginning of the internet generation, let's say. So we first decided what kind of uprising we wanted to talk about. And then we kind of figure out where we had some contacts around the world that could actually make us go further and looking for artists that had lived this these uprising. So we kind of did, like, for example, in Tehran, we had some connection and we found Rambud, one artist that had really been involved in the uprising. And then we did a casting in Tunis to find it. And then in Montreal, I know Jean-Francois have talked to me about how he was working as an artist during the uprising. And then Yen Fan, that is in Taipei, I've worked with her and she had talked to me a lot about how she was involved. So I knew her. So there was more people, more uprising we wanted to go on when we had other contact in artists around the world for that, but we decided to stay at five and mm-hmm. kind of have a at five was the kind of the better to kind of have in an hour and a half of a show, we kind of have enough time to kind of get involved in each of them and kind of knowing them. Because more than that, it's hard to not to get involved in every story, like mm-hmm. talking about more than five stories.
Yeah, sometimes it's just better to not tell all the stories, but to focus on a few. Jean-Francois, can you tell me a little bit about your role as repping Montreal and repping your corner of political engagement?
Yes, at that time, we are talking about the Maple Spring, the student strikes in 2012. At that time, I was doing a PhD at l'Université de Montréal in comparative literature. And I was involved because my girlfriend was a student at the Cégep level. And she was very involved. She was one of the co-porte-parole, co-speakerman with Gabriel Nadeau-Dubois. And for that, I was inside of the movement. I was informed of everything. So I decided to engage myself, to involve in the movement, and at that time I was president of my association étudiante, and we decided to make some actions like precisely I used a video projector and a battery and to make some projection in the city, mm-hmm. Some actions against some symbols, and that was one part of my engagement.
But it's so fascinating, the process of choosing what to keep and what to kind of put aside and how to find these similar courants, like currents between each of the five stories, is part of your process.
Mm-hmm, totally. And of course the context is different when you're walking in the street in Tehran and in Montreal. It's not the same context, of course. Social and political context is completely different. So there is something from inside that is similar, the way they had to fight, the way they felt that they had to go in the street, and this power we have in this moment of wanting things to change. But still, the context of all is completely different, of course.
You know, in choosing to put this piece on at such a wild time for theater and for arts in general, at such mm-hmm. a weird moment, was it difficult to decide to put this, I'm not sure about, you know, decision to put it through this season, and whether going online was a given from the beginning, or if it was something you know, thought this would work really well?
Since the beginning of the pandemic, people were saying to us, hey, you should do a web version of this. So we kind of had this in mind, of course. Mm-hmm. But then how could we know that in March 2021, people will still want to go on the web? I don't know. And would they still would the theaters be open? So it was a very hard year for those kind of decision. We all, the artists, had to find those decision of what should we plan, because nobody knows the future. So it was kind of hard. But of course this piece, we kind of knew, of course, there was already a language of there was already a Zoom language, so we were already like really close to it. So it's one of the only, for me, a piece that really like is in phase with the medium of the web, the online version.
It fits the medium. Mm-hmm. Well, Mireille and Jean-François, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me about Intersection. It's so cool that you can access this from anywhere and that it's gotten this new life online. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you
very much.
That was Mireille Camier, co-director, and Jean-François Boisvenu, an actor and video designer. They are part of the team at Théâtre Periscope presenting Intersections on nightly at 8 o'clock until Saturday, March 13th. Visit theatreperiscope.qc.ca for more. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Dance Moves Art, the slogan of Festival Bouge d'ici, a contemporary dance series that brightens up the scene every winter. Despite the limits on gatherings and performances, dancers and choreographers have been picking up new skills, becoming videographers. There are a ton of short films on demand that you can check out as part of Bouge d'ici this year. Emily Rouet is coordinator at Bouge d'ici, and Kenny Strutley is artistic producer at Mainline Theatre, which hosts the festival. I spoke with them last Friday as Bouge d'ici was getting underway. Welcome to Upstage, Emily and Kenny. Thank you so much for taking the time. How are you both doing? Emily, you go first.
I'm pretty good. Thank
Simple
you.
Simple question. Kenny, how you doing?
It's great. I'm really enjoying the sun. It's nice to enjoy the sun, and I can't wait to go for a walk when we're done with this interview, because you don't get to enjoy it before curfew happens.
I know, right? Such strange times. Could you have imagined a year ago when Bouge d'ici was happening in 2020 that, you know, a year later that you would be setting up videos of contemporary dance online and no one can leave their house after 8 o'clock?
No, absolutely not. I can tell you last year when we brought our festival to a place, which usually is in January, we were so excited. We brought in Outside Ethel Inside, which was a clown show with dance in it that Amy Blackmore, the executive and artistic director of Mainline, and myself saw at the Toronto Fringe. And we were so excited to bring it to Montreal. And then we brought back as well Common Space with the mentorship between artists and members of the dance community. And Emily was a mentor as well. And that was so lovely to like have that back in our space, and like Bouge was vibrant and still there and still like sort of being present for what it was created for. You know, like when it was there in 2009, it was because it was a lack of opportunities for choreographers and dancers. So the festival was there to give that opportunity. And last year was like another explosion of that. But no, if Kenny from the future had came and said, Kenny, next year we're going to be in lockdown, get ready for this, I wouldn't have believed it. First of all, I would have been shocked that there would have been a future Kenny there, but I would also not believe that.
Emily, what are your thoughts? How strange is it to be working on a dance festival at a time like this?
It's I agree with Kenny. I would not have believed it because I was in the festival last year. I was really into it. Mm-hmm. And I even did the Nuit Blanche and other stuff. And like, I was working on scenic projects. It's out of the ordinary. I love video dance, so I'm happy to take part of the festival this year in that matter. And it's being, I feel that what we did is very, for me, there was something natural to it, and I love all the application we received. So it's, in a weird way, it came out nicely. So there's a weird mix between weirdness, and it's still going on. Yeah. It works.
Enjoy a little, yeah. You just said dance video, video dance.
That's the term I use in French, but I'm never sure in English. I think it's more dance films, we would say.
Yeah. Can I seize upon that? Because I am a bit of a dance basic person. I see it, I love it, I appreciate it. I'm not as much in the world. Is it a very big artistic or stylistic difference to go from, you know, putting live dance on stage to turning around and asking the artists to produce videos, which is what you guys are doing now?
Yeah, definitely. It's like I would say it's like the equivalent of doing theater versus doing cinema, film. So there is, you need to think of the video, you need to think of the camera, the lens when you start working dance with the camera, as opposed to when you work dance on stage. So the contact with the audience is not the same. So, and when you do dance for the stage or dance outside, there's all these, sorry, in French is going to be the space, le lieu is going to be very, well, depending on the artist, but it influences what you work on. So if you work for the lens, for the camera, also depending of the artist, you're going to address it in your own way. Some artists in the festival, I'm sorry, I'm getting excited, but some artists in our program, they had a very straightforward approach and almost like a scenic, but it's still video dance because they had to think about it. So you will see difference in between the way the artists approach the video.
So when you put out a call, because you have 25 different videos, it's a tremendous amount of work, of output. When you were putting out a call out, what were you anticipating? What were you asking for? What were the artists kind of expected to fulfill?
So when we put out that call, it was based off the call we did for This Is Not a Fringe, which we did in June of last year. It was our sort of edition of the Fringe Festival in a virtual pandemic setting. We asked artists to create artwork that was less than 6 minutes long and that they could do in a safe pandemic way. So they didn't have like require so many dancers in front of the camera that they didn't, that they could still keep a distance, but also that they explore their outdoors, you know, like I think so many spaces, so many times when a choreographer is putting on a show, they think about the space that they're in. They're working at Mainline, they're working at La Chapelle, they're working at Tangente. But then we were like, why don't we go in, out and explore a bit more? So so that was a call for June. So when we came to this winter edition, we said you could go outside and film, but of course it is winter. But it's more like explore a different sort of place to perform your artwork. Like don't just use just a basic room, like explore the different opportunities you have now that we're not in a sort of closed in space. And yeah, the call out went out and we were really excited about it. We've got 25 videos, there are a lot of choreographers out there, so you get to see the 10 that we had for This Is Not a Fringe and 15 new ones that are just for this special 2021 Bouge DC Festival.
The list of creators is very long. It's quite impressive to see people stepping up like that. I'm speaking with Emily Ruet, who is with Bouge DC. She's a coordinator as well as a dancer herself. Kenny Struli, artistic producer at Mainline Theater. So 25 different videos, and Emily, you were kind of hinting at the differences, you know, where you said between each piece, where you said, don't just, you know, do it in a room, but think, I guess, creatively. I'm wondering for both of you, if there was any settings or any way it was shot that kind of shocked and surprised you?
Well, there is so many settings. It's very different. So from the ones that are from This Is Not a Fringe, if you didn't see the This Is Not a Fringe festival, you won't, maybe you will be able to tell because they're most summery, but we did accept videos for this call that were probably filmed in the summer but never showed before. So there's all kind of setting. It can be inside, outside. There's also some more. Il y a comme plusieurs, il y a plusieurs utilisations. Il y a des effets aussi, des effets special effects that could be like superposition of images. Outside in the snow is very nice. Videos of people like trying it outside and it works.
You know, there's one number, and I forget the artist's name, and maybe Emily, you can help me figure out who it is, where the performer, it's one shot of a camera and this person is just dancing on her balcony and you can hear the buzzing of the streets downstairs. Wow. And I think that to me is And you have a video like that where it's one shot and it's a camera who's going on. Who's the artist, Emily?
It's Noël Vézina.
Noël Vézina, that's it, exactly. So she's like on this balcony and she's performing this thing. You can hear the music. You can hear people downstairs, like on the street walking, like also looking up, hearing the music and like wondering what's going on. And then you have other numbers where there are different shots and sort of filmed more like a film with different takes and different angles. And that's also really good too. And I think for me, it's sort of, it's so impressive how these artists have like been able to recreate what they would do inside a theater and then put it in front of a camera, because that's a whole new art form. You know, there's like, there's film classes in CGIPS, you know, like I went to theater school, but I could have went to also film class, you know? And it's like, I think transposing that to transforming their dance pieces into a sort of video is always a challenge. And it's a challenge that I think a lot of artists were like forced upon with the pandemic. They were just like, and now learn how to use a camera.
There's a whole bunch of different skills that everyone's kind of having to add to their resume, right? Emily, what is the conversation right now in the dance world about what the pandemic means or how people are kind of coping and adapting?
It's like it's mixed and different kind of opinions. Some people are very into the video, so they kind of embrace it. Everybody's shocked, of course, and we don't want to rejoice for that, but the pandemic will for the presenter in dance, they are looking for videos, they are looking for this kind of content. So for artists that already do it, it's a plus for them. But there are also some artists that are refraining, or not refraining, but they're resisting that phenomenon. So it's not like black and white. There's like different levels. Some artists are more on Instagram, some artists don't want to do the social medias. So, and yeah, it's kind of it's a complex question. And people don't want to judge if they do videos, because it can also be very creative to do it. And some artists also, for the pandemic, I know that artists are also stopping doing the art, or they're reflecting on it. They're thinking about it in another way, because of our way of producing art and dance has been stressful before the pandemic. Yeah. So it's a good time to think about it and maybe rethink of new possibilities. There's a lot of talks about that.
I know that in some artistic corners, there's talk that, you know, that a lot of people being able to get the CERB or some of their work is on pause. So there's more time to be creative or to experiment or to, you know, branch out into something that you haven't tried before, which is experimenting. I'm repeating myself. But do you hear that kind of talk, that maybe there'll be a different kind of renaissance or different kinds of new exciting things that will come out of what is a troubling time?
Yeah, I do feel like we are, it's a cliche thing to say, but the human is resilient. So there is a lot of that. And in the talk we had on March 3rd, I also heard that, that reflection about, yeah, this is giving me the idea to do this. And it's opening this door that I never thought I would be able to open. So for sure. But there's also the opposite of like, because being creative and doing stuff is also for me also resonates as being productive, and it's an added stress to what the pandemic is. So anyway, I'm digressing, but yeah, so there is, for me, there's a both of these aspects that come to mind, but for sure there is some creativity coming up from it, for sure.
In a weird way, it's something to look forward to. We can see some of that creativity and that thought in the current pieces, and there's more work that's going to be coming out in the months and years to come, I think. Fantastic thing about Bouge DC, this edition, is that it is very accessible, because you can see these videos from home. You have a panel discussion that will be coming out shortly as well, which is more about, I think, the technical or the art, not forward facing, but more the background facing kind of a world of dance. Kenny, do you want to tell me a little bit about how we can dip into Bouge DC this year?
For sure. Yeah. So this year, like you mentioned, we do want to focus on accessibility, but also, you know, financial accessibility, but also schedule accessibility. So most of our content is available on demand. You can watch all 25 Bouge DC videos within 3-4 hours all stuck together, or you can dip in a little bit, watch a little bit of videos over here, and then take a break, go for a walk, come back and watch some more. There's definitely a lot of videos for a lot of people, and you can watch them all. It's available from the 3rd to the 14th, so we've got a couple days left if you want to watch them. And I think the important thing is that, you know, no one gets turned around, because we have a ticket called Accessible Bouge, which is for $5. Another one, reduced bouge at $12, classic bouge at $25, and a support bouge at $50. And with that $50 one, you get a $25 tax receipt with that ticket. So you get $25 back in a tax receipt. And all those passes, they include everything. That you don't get turned around. You don't get more if you pay more. Everyone gets the same content for the same price. And that's the thing I'm really proud of, too. We're using our new box office software from Red 61, which is came from Edinburgh, which the Edinburgh Fringe uses now. A lot of the Canadian fringes are using as well. It really allowed us to create these sort of different platforms and to give more people the chance to participate in our festival.
Oh, that's so interesting to hear about. We don't often hear about the actual box office, right? That's so fascinating. Any parting thoughts, guys?
I just want to say I'm also not a dance person. I come more from the theater background, but I love receiving bouge every year at Mainline. And it's, you know, the reason why we've gone virtual is because it is very important to Mainline. You know, it's important to continue opening those doors for those emerging choreographs and creating those opportunities for them to work on their craft, even in a year where, you know, we talked about Renaissance and changing things up, you know. And I think that's really what's impressive about bouge, is that, like, we've found a way to recreate that vibe and that gathering feeling that we have on a virtual platform, so we can all enjoy dance from the comfort of our homes, maybe with popcorn if you have some at home, or else under a nice warm blanket during these cold wintry days.
Awesome.
I just want to add that I feel that it's a privilege to watch all these videos, to see, like, the work of an emerging artist. It's beautiful, and it's a privilege to be able to witness this. So I encourage people to go see the 25 Bouge and all our live events.
Emily and Kenny, it's been my privilege to speak with you too. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're both very, very busy with getting the festival off the ground. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
That was Emily Ruet of Festival Bouge DC and Kenny Struli of Mainline Theater. The festival continues until Sunday, and you can access the Bouge shorts online at mainlinetheater.ca. You can pick your price point between $5 and $50. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca today, Thursday, March 11th, 2021. This evening you heard Patrick Lloyd-Brennan and Holly Greco of Quebec Drama Federation, Mireille Camier and Jean-François Boisvenu of Théâtre Periscope, and Emily Ruet and Kenny Struli of Bouge DC Dance Festival. A big thank you to my guests. Don't forget, this weekend is the virtual Nuit Blanche. We are still under curfew after all, but you can find out more at montrealenlumiere.com and learn more about the festival's culinary and arts programming there. Tune in to past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under archives. Thank you to Tamara at CKUT for making sure this show gets to air, and thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and CKUT.ca. Until next time, stay home and stay safe.
You are listening to CKUD 90.3 FM. CKUT 90.3 FM.
The March 11th edition of Gray Matters. Tonight from Alternative Radio, we have a lecture by Ralph Nader entitled Corporatism's Threat to Democracy. It was a lecture delivered in Winston, Connecticut on February 27th of this year. At the end of tonight's show, we'll give you all the particulars so you can obtain a copy of tonight's show or a transcript of it. So without any further ado, here's tonight's lecture by Ralph Nader, entitled Corporatism's Threat to Democracy.
The minimum wage is frozen at $7.25 an hour. That's corporatism. The tax code allows corporations to escape paying taxes to support our country, our public services. That's corporatism. Corporations inflict corporate crime on consumers. That's corporatism. They block access to courts by restricting the law of torts for millions of wrongfully injured people. That's corporatism. We've got to get used to that word.
That's Ralph Nader, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Ralph Nader on corporatism's threat to democracy. Milton Friedman is the godfather of modern conservative economics. A Nobel Prize winner, his ideas informed what is called the Chicago School. He laid the groundwork for Reagan-era neoliberalism with his landmark essay, "The Social Responsibility of Business is to Increase its Profits."